think, inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sand or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories all.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Indeed, Kingdom of Nye. Good morning, everybody. Great to be here. I'm Art Bell. Coming up shortly is William Thomas, subject contrails. He is in Canada. He's an investigative reporter, and this is one story that has big-time legs. It won't go away. So William Thomas coming up shortly. William Thomas is an independent journalist who learned his craft on the streets of Milwaukee, Chicago, and Woodstock during the 60s. Woodstock, too, huh? William Thomas reported for the Environmental News Service while serving as a member of a three-man Gulf Environmental Emergency Response Team during and immediately following the Gulf War. Specializing in military affairs, health, and the environment, Thomas's editorial commentaries have appeared in the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, Vancouver Sun, Times Colonist newspapers, as well as Monday, Earth Island Journal, and Echo Decision magazines. He is a frequent guest on American talk radio, you know, like here, has appeared on CBC and TV. His writing and photography have appeared in more than 55 publications in 8 countries, with translations into French, Dutch, and Japanese. William Thomas is the author of Bringing the War Home, The Secret Biowar in the Gulf, Scorched Earth, The Military's War Against the Environment, Y2K Hype, Hysteria or Crashed Reality Check, Alternative Health, 40 Investigations into Good Health and Long Life. William Thomas's reporting has won the 1989 Western Canada Magazine Feature Awards, the 1990 Canadian Weekly Periodical's Best Feature Award, and the 97 BC Yukon Community Newspaper Award, and the 1998 BC Outdoors Award. You should know who you're about to hear. His Gulf War documentary, Echo War, won the 1991 U.S. Environmental Film Festival Award for the best documentary short segments. Actually, have appeared extensively on Canada's CBC, as well as CNN and NBC. William Thomas currently lives and works among the Gulf Islands of British Columbia, and he has, I don't know, stumbled into what may be the biggest story of the year, in one sense, although, as many people, Ed Dames and others, have pointed out, all bets are off in 99. But right now, this thing has legs. I'm getting hundreds and hundreds of faxes about what William Thomas has said on this program. William, welcome back.
It's good to be back with you, Art.
Let's, for the sake of the new audience, and there's a lot of new people there all the time, new radio stations. I've got about 7 out there right now tonight that I'm not even announcing yet. So there's obviously a lot of new people. How, William, did you stumble into this contrail story?
About 15 weeks ago now, I received an assignment from the managing editor of Environment News Service to check out a story reported by Mr. William Wallace in Washington State. And Mr. Wallace reported that he and his wife, Ann, had been watching large multi-engine jet aircraft at high altitude weaving grid-like patterns for hours over their remote mountain home, mm-hmm. and that they had been getting very sick from the fallout, and also that the weather changed after this spring. Clear blue skies became completely overcast, and normal weather patterns seemed to be altered. And that's how this whole thing started, Art, and how my life has changed, it seems, irrevocably since that moment.
Well, since you had that initial contact, at that point, even you, William, with your background, must have been somewhat skeptical at first, right?
Oh, absolutely. I've been in the military, Art. I've been a pilot, and I know what contrails are. I know what ice condensation off of wingtips and jet engines exhaust looks like. I think we all do. However, when I finally contacted William Wallace and he sent me a videotape he had made, I'll tell you, I sat up straight in my chair and looked at that and said, gee, I've never seen anything like this. These trails are being laid over hours. And I watched a clear blue sky become overcast. Of course, since that time, I've stepped right outside my office here and watched the same phenomena with my own eyes and taped it with my own camera.
I know, I have too. And, I came to this story so hesitantly, and even after you've been on the air a couple times with me, I'm still hesitant, but I'm compelled to continue because I seen it myself right over my house. And then, look, I've got the guests that I trust. For example, Charles Osman, who works on nanotechnology, has written to me. And he believes that ostensibly it's being used for tactical biological warfare simulations. What about that possibility? As we roll over the possibilities, I mean, we all, I think, recognize there is something going on now with contrails. Something different is occurring. Could it possibly be some sort of simple tactical biological warfare simulation? Important word, simulation.
Art, I used to think that midway through this investigation, you have two congressional investigations in the United States in 77 and 94 that uncovered a Pentagon project to test biological warfare simulants on the American populace. They sprayed hundreds and hundreds of cities in the U.S., also in Canada, also we just found throughout England, England's populated southern coast,
mm-hmm.
with various simulants to test dispersal patterns.
Right, exactly.
And I thought, okay, there's nothing new in that. We have, as I mentioned earlier with you, pattern and precedent seems to be continuing, but it comes off the rails for me, Art, because this has been going on for several years. It has intensified since around the 1st of last December. It is still going on. I mean, how much of a test is necessary to test a dispersal pattern? And heck, you can do that on computers nowadays anyway. So if it's a simulation, I think it's gone on rather long. What is interesting, though, in the last few weeks since we've last spoke, we have found Serratia marcescens bacteria turning up in a sample taken in Idaho of the cobweb-type material.
Excuse me, but what is that?
Well, it's a bacteria that can make you very sick with upper respiratory problems. It's also found in the natural environment, which has been a problem in testing to determine whether it's background bacteria or some something more sinister. Mm-hmm. We know that in 1950, the U.S. Navy sprayed cerasum marcescens throughout San Francisco, and many residents became ill with pneumonia-like symptoms, which, of course, are at epidemic proportions today. That's a Center for Disease Control determination, not my own. They're calling it an epidemic as we speak tonight. And as I just mentioned, we have found cerasum marcescens in a sample.
Now, you say they sprayed that in San Francisco, and a lot of people got sick.
Mm-hmm.
It was a test?
Yes, this is a test and only a test, but we're not going to tell you about it because the law at the time read that the Pentagon could test any chemical biological agent on the American public without notifying them in advance and simply notifying a public official 30 days beforehand. That law, by the way, was amended in 97 and now reads that informed consent must be obtained from all test subjects.
Well, I don't know about you, but nobody's written me a letter yet and said, hey, is it okay to spray you?
I haven't received a call myself.
You either, huh?
But I'll tell you one thing. A lot of people are very, very ill. In fact, you sound healthy. I'm healthy. And I thank God for that. But very few people I know are.
Well, I spend a lot of time inside.
There you go.
I'm sort of a house bug. But,
so anyway, we are seeing some of this earlier material, the cerasum marcescens, and a nasty little yeast, a mold called Niger, a black yeast,
mm-hmm.
which has laid my co-researcher and writer very low. She's very sick after handling some samples. We'll get into that later on.
Let me pick one. Dear Art, this came in moments ago. I would never have believed it and didn't believe it until I saw it today. Chemtrails everywhere. There were chemtrails from north of Sacramento, California, to Bakersfield. The whole San Joaquin Valley was being sprayed. Anyone in a 30,000 square mile area would have seen it. I watched it for 8 hours. And this is typical, William, of what I'm getting, not by the ones or tens, or 20s, or hundreds, but literally by thousands.
Me too, Art. In fact, my portfolio of eyewitness reports from pilots, police officers, military personnel, and just folks who live near airports and air bases, and have been watching jets and contrails for most of their adult lives, I'm up over 600 written reports at this time.
Can I try one more possibility? I'm going to throw some at you of what this could be. Now, one thing that seems clear right now is that our weather patterns are changing, and fairly rapidly. You know about all the nasty weather we've had lately.
Oh, yeah.
Is it possible that because of the atmospheric changes, contrails are remaining longer, lingering, even turning into what appear to be foggy cloud banks? Is it possible the weather changes themselves are causing this?
I'll certainly go part way down that road with you, Art. The extra moisture in the air and the changes in the upper atmosphere, I and others do feel are making contrails, now we're talking normal ice crystal contrails,
right,
more visible and longer lasting. But this is what is compelling. At high altitudes where these cirrus clouds and contrails form, we have wind shear and usually very strong winds, and they push these things around and if they don't disperse them, blow these clouds over adjoining states and regions.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty rapidly. What we're seeing with the chemtrail phenomena are entire skies over a region becoming obscured, mm-hmm. which contrails don't obscure a complete region, and they linger, they stay, they remain for a day, an afternoon, unlike contrails. Also, we're seeing whatever is being sprayed at lower altitudes, much lower altitudes.
All right, hold that note. It's the bottom of the hour. When you get back, we're going to talk a little bit about evidence, and there is some that William Thomas has collected. Chemtrails, contrails, what are they? They're up there, and they're different. Again, here is William Thomas. William, are you here?
I certainly am.
All right, then. I've got something I want you to deal with for me, if you wouldn't mind. I just got a fax from a fellow who says, "Hey, Art, we're the maker of some of your odd contrails, especially in Washington State, Oregon, Montana, and the desert Southwest. I can assure you they are simply normal airplane vapor trails. Have any of your listeners seen cloverleaf patterns or concentric circles? That's probably us doing some flight testing. In fact, now that I know people are watching, why, we may have to invent some crop circle patterns to fly in the sky." Now, this message comes from a senior flight test engineer, the senior flight test engineer, I guess, flight test engineering Boeing. And he's on the line here, and his name is Rocky. Rocky, you want to give your full name?
Yeah, that's fine if you want. But do you want me to?
Yeah, sure. It's up to you.
Rocky Korais.
All right, and you're a senior flight engineer for Boeing?
Yeah, senior flight test engineering and operations at Boeing.
All right. So you're saying this is all normal stuff.
Yeah, I've been listening to some of the conversations, and I really haven't understood why all the excitement over this. We do a lot of flying, and especially in flight tests, we have to fly a lot of different patterns in the sky over different navigation beacons, and just the nature of it will create some pretty spectacular patterns that last quite a while in the sky, which is a perfectly normal thing.
William, any questions for this gentleman?
Yes, I do. Pleasure to speak with you, Rocky.
Yes, William.
Do you do flight testing over all of these contiguous states?
We do a lot of flight testing over the Pacific Northwest, over the ocean, over California, New Mexico, Nevada, Wyoming, Montana, all over the place.
Would your flight tests involve formations of 2, 4, 6 or more aircraft at one time?
No, we typically fly one or maybe two if we have a chase plane flying along with it.
Hmm.
And what altitude would you normally conduct your flight tests?
Our flight tests are conducted everywhere from 250 feet off the ground all the way up to 41,000 feet.
And what type aircraft, sir, would be involved here?
We fly everything. Well, our chase planes are T-38. They're little supersonic airplanes. And our airplanes that we test are everything from a 737, which is Boeing's smallest plane, up to the one we're testing right now is a 777-300, which is a very, very large airplane.
Oh, I've been in one of those. They're incredible.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I sat in the cockpit of one of those.
Oh. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're impressive aircraft. Anyway, William?
Rocky, would these test aircraft be painted any particular paint scheme to identify them as test aircraft?
No, they aren't. Sometimes they're painted in customer colors, like Northwest Airlines or something.
Sure.
Most of the time when they're in our test fleet, they're either just white airplanes or they come out of the factory without any paint at all. So they could be silver or have kind of an, what do we call, anodyne green color to them.
Mm-hmm. And would these test aircraft remain in a certain area flying back and forth? You mentioned navigational beacons and circular patterns.
Would they remain quartering a particular patch of sky for, say, some hours? Yeah, we'll remain over one patch of sky for up to 8 hours. To 8 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That we have many test conditions to take care of to certify these airplanes, so when we find some good air, and we always look for the proper atmospheric conditions to do a lot of the testing we do, we'll remain in that patch of the sky for the duration of the test.
And finally, is this a I'm sure test line has been going on since airplanes first flew, but is the concentration of testing that you're speaking about this evening, has that been going on for a long time? I mean, people obviously are seeing something they have never seen before.
We've been doing testing a long time, and there's a lot of other companies and the military that does flight testing, too, and that's done all over the country. We tend to do an increase of it nowadays because of the sheer volume of airplanes that we're cranking out of the factory.
May I ask a question, Rocky?
Sure.
There is some recent scientific discussion with regard to contrails, just regular old contrails, turning into weather events. In other words, actually beginning to form, I don't know, cumulus clouds or whatever kind of clouds they are, that then turn into cloud banks. Are you aware of that?
I'm not aware of it, but with air traffic and the way, you know, when we're in the air, we get routed along with other air traffic by controllers, although we do get certain blocks of airspace for ourselves. And everybody's routed along kind of invisible highways in the sky, and that's right. A reason for a lot of the cross-hatching. The intersections that are seen are simply aircraft flying from one place to another, and they go over the same waypoint or nav beacon on the ground.
So you haven't heard any discussion of even regular contrails turning into cloud banks?
No, we haven't. No, we haven't. Although I've watched contrail since I was a kid. I've always been an airplane fanatic. That's why I'm in flight test now. And I've always watched them and watched them spread out and watched them turn into kind of a misty cloud up in the sky.
Mm-hmm. But you're not familiar with contrail to misty cloud to virtual overcast?
Not to virtual overcast. I've seen conditions over major metropolitan areas where you have a lot of air traffic, say for Atlanta's a major hub.
Sure.
And you'll get a lot of air traffic that will crisscross right over that area.
All right.
And eventually you get a haze out of it.
I got you. All right. Now, one more question.
Uh-huh.
Is it possible, Rocky, that if there was a covert program and there was an addition to jet fuel that you use, that you might not be aware of it?
Our engines that we burn nowadays on the great majority of the aircraft burn so clean there isn't any real emissions that come out that isn't unburnt. You get the carbon dioxide, the nitrous oxide, and exhaust fumes out. But those engines burn so clean nowadays, they don't emit anything visible.
William, I recall you're talking about one type of jet fuel with a component in it that you didn't much like. What was that?
The jet fuel is JP-8. The tested component is ethylene dibromide, a known carcinogen. I would agree with Rocky that under normal flight conditions this would be pretty well dispersed from altitude. Nevertheless, it has been tested and found in JP-8 by Aquatech Environmental Labs.
JP-8's not a fuel I'm familiar with. We typically use JP-4, Right, that's more of a kerosene type of, is a standard fuel that's used. And they're a fairly clean burning fuel.
So, Rocky, there's no way, in your view, that anything could be going on that you wouldn't be aware of.
Not that I'm aware of at all, and I've been flying in flight tests for the last 10 years, and the trails that I understand and the trails that I've seen all over, and I see a lot of them, are just standard, and I've looked at some of the pictures that have been on the website, and they all appear to me as just standard old vapor trails, and really pretty to look at and watch them twirl around in the sky.
Rocky, have you noticed any unusual cloud formations or cloudy conditions that you haven't seen in years past? Are the skies any different to you these days?
No. No, they aren't. I see maybe more concentrations over the major hubs, but I relate that to the increase in air traffic that we have nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Rocky, I really, really appreciate your coming on the program.
Oh, no problem. I've listened to you for a long time, Art. I really enjoy your show. You've had some very technologically thought-provoking programs in the past.
All right, my friend, thank you.
Thank you.
And take care. Now, the only thing that I would question, or I can question based on my knowledge, is he said that he wasn't aware of any discussions ongoing with regard to contrails producing actual then cloud banks and weather. And there is a significant amount of that discussion going on right now in all kinds of circles, so I'm a little surprised that he had not heard that. Otherwise, what do you think, William?
First, I agree with you there. NASA is spending over $100 million to study cloud formation. The Air Force is very interested in predicting contrails for obvious tactical reasons. Rocky's report is pretty well standard from many of the pilots I'm talking to, but I hasten to add, not all of them. I have reports from even airline pilots who are saying these are unusual contrails. Mm-hmm. What sticks out in my mind from that our brief conversation were the multiple aircraft aspects of so many sightings, and also that they are taking place away from major hubs, away from navigational beacons. Yes, that's a factor in some cases. And yes, I too am seeing photographs on the website that appear to be normal contrails. I will say emphatically that not all contrails are normal, and that many of these intense cross-hatching patterns are taking place over more remote, or at least certainly not major airways in the United States and Canada.
Well, I'm not a contrail aficionado, but like everybody else, I've seen them all my life. And I must say, what I have seen over the last, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 months, has been radically different than what I've seen before. Now, that's my own observation. I went out with a camera and took some of my own photographs. Those are up on my website somewhere. Keith, get them up there if you can. And so I have personal experience here, and they seem different.
They are different, and radically different, I think, really puts a finger on it. People, again, have been watching air traffic. They've been watching the growth in air traffic for years, and all of a sudden, Art, you and I are both, and a few other researchers, being inundated with thousands of emails and letters of people saying, this is strange, I've never seen this before. And again, we have trained observers. I have a guy who's a Navy
lookout for 8 years. He knows what he's looking at. Military people, other military people, pilots. This is radically different and sudden. And I will say, I'll also jump in here and add that the skies that I am seeing are radically different from any kind of clouds I've ever witnessed. I've flown myself. I've sailed the oceans for almost 2 decades now. I'm very attuned to the sky, and I'm seeing cumulus clouds art that seem to be embedded in smeary white veils, some of them vertical veils, that I have never seen associated with cumulus-type clouds. You get a stratus layer, fine. You get a cirrus, fine. You get cumulus, and they dot a blue sky like cotton balls. But to see the cumulus out here on the West Coast floating in this milky, murky haze, it makes my body really nervous. I get a visceral reaction.
I understand. Beyond observation that you've made, that I've made, that hundreds and thousands of other people have made, what proof do we have, analysis so far? Would you run through that quickly, that something is going on?
Absolutely. We have earlier tests that I mentioned. Oakville, Washington, a major case back in 94, where a Pseudomonas fluorescens and a bacteria, as well as human white blood cells, were found in a goo that covered quite a large area.
Yep.
Repeatedly.
I know about that.
Okay. We have other tests done, and as I mentioned, they have been questionable because of the possibility of background bacterial contamination. I have been involved with a journalist specializing in health and environment, Aramemia, you're probably listening tonight, Kasani, and she has been involved first in the central United States recently in collecting a sample of goo. This is a brown goo that people have been reporting all over the U.S. This fell on a house near a major metropolitan airport. It splattered all sides of a garage at the same time.
If she is listening, by the way, and you want to get her on the air, and you can give me a phone number during the break, I'd be glad to get her on.
That'd be good. She's very sick, and I don't think she can even physically talk tonight. Last word I had from her, but I'll mention that in a moment.
All right.
She collected the samples and ran a temperature, got a sore throat, started coughing that same night. She gave the samples to a friend at the university to check out. He got sick. The woman whose house it fell on got sick, and 2 weeks before Christmas, this was around November 17th, 2 weeks before Christmas, she had a heart attack. Okay. Armenia took the samples, put them in the glove box of her car, and left them there for a while, and when she looked again, they got a furry kind of growth to them, and they started sprouting colors, black and reddish purple and dark purple. So she thought, I got together with her long distance and financed a lab test. We took those samples to a government licensed lab.
Yes, sir.
Didn't tell them about chemtrails. We did mention that they might be a little careful looking at this stuff.
So a blind test.
A blind test, and when Armenia went back, the lab technician there was very upset and said, where did you get this hot biohazard, where did you get this biohazard material?
You're kidding.
I am not kidding. They said in that lab they had never seen a sample culture grows so quickly. It takes about 3 days, Art, to grow out a culture.
This thing flowered and bloomed within 48 hours, frightened the lab staff. They checked it out. They found our old buddy Pseudomonas fluorescens can cause serious infections in humans. And let's remember, please, that these were taken off an aluminum-sided building. There's no soil contamination whatsoever. So gotcha. We have a clean sample.
Gotcha.
They found...
How much of this crap came down, by the way? Any idea?
Yeah, I've seen the videotape. The building was literally spattered on all sides, so quite a significant quantity. Also, another house nearby and a person living near the end of the runway a couple miles away reported he had been, his house had been hit the year before in October.
William,
other people reported the same thing.
Right. Have you published any of these results on your website?
I have. I've just written an updated story for the Environment News Service, and they are very, very particular about fact-checking, about their credibility. And we went through this rigorously, but with a government-certified lab test, I have published that story with Environment News Service. It's gone worldwide to every major news organization. It is on my website. And that story also talks about a bacillus art that is a restricted, somewhat restricted substance that was found in our sample in the central United States. Now, this thing is by itself quite harmless. That's the good news. The disturbing news is that it is used as a restriction enzyme. Restriction meaning to cut DNA. It's used to modify DNA in a laboratory. This thing came out of a research lab. And then we found Streptomyces, quite a lot of Streptomyces. And this is a fungus that can be used to make antibiotics like streptomycin.
Right.
However, in its raw form as a fungus, it can make you very sick. And when my researchers started looking at the three things that were found in our sample, they found them all listed on the same page, so they seem to have gone together. So you say, well, that's very interesting, so that's one test. What does it mean? Well, here's the clincher, Art. Armenia managed to track down a family on the east coast of the United States who had made the news a year ago when their house, which happens to be aluminum-sided, just like the other one, was covered with a similar gel. Now, this was January 17th, 1998. Both incidents here occurred between 1 and 3 p.m. in the afternoon, almost a year apart. So we had a very old sample. It had, in fact, dried up. It was very dry. And I thought, okay, let's see if there's any life left in this and see if we can get a corroboration. So
we've only got seconds.
All right, we'll get back to this, but we took it to the same lab and we found a match.
Oh, my God. All right. William Thomas is my guest. We're talking about contrails or chemtrails. And when we come back, I'm going to invite some special phone calls. This is Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch that dial.
He puts on his headphones with barely enough time here. I want to read you a fax, and then we'll get back to William Thomas. It's entitled, The Sky Don't Lie. It says, Hi, Art. I just woke up and heard Mr. Thomas on tonight and thought that I'd send this to you and your guest. Tell Rocky about the cloud banks which filled my entire sky. I've been a skeptic of the infamous contrails. I owe Mr. Thomas, your listeners, you, and my father an apology for being such a skeptic and thought that you were all crazy. This story happened two Sundays ago to me, and I've got to share it with you. On Sunday morning, 4:25:99 at about 10 a.m., my dad called me to say that contrails are coming. Look to the west. So I go out, I look, I see nothing but a totally blue sky with not so much as a cloud anywhere. Actually, an immaculate day. So I jokingly say to my father, "Are you okay?" He replies, "You'll see them soon, trust me." As it is, he lives miles away. How would I see them, especially up in the mountains? Well, around 11 a.m. Eastern, I go to church, and what do I see? About five or six contrails coming this way. So now I'm in church, and I notice that people are coughing and sneezing. And I say to myself, no way, too weird. Couldn't wait till the service was over to look up at the sky, and I was blown away at the amount of contrails now coming, and huge ones at that that were right over us at the time. Well, at this point, I had already decided that I was going to do yard work all day after church. As I drive home, it was a weird feeling I had looking at least 25 to 30 different contrails now. Once I was home and doing yard work, I couldn't help but look up every 5 minutes to see something else. So one of the times I look up and I see what appears to be three broken off contrails that actually formed a thumb shape and two fingers connected at the wrist, and they had rainbows all the way around them as if you traced your fingers on a piece of paper. It was spooky. I was waiting for two more fingers to appear and form a hand, and guess what? I would have been on my knees for a long time if that had happened. Anyway, at about 1:30 p.m., I look up. Now, I see a perfectly round cloud, kind of like a tennis ball, fuzzy on the edges, but it held its perfect circle shape until it finally blew on by. Many other people witnessed all this insane phenomenon. Then the weirdest of all, a huge plane comes flying over up here in the mountains with all four props, and my father had also seen it where he was, so it was flying east to west. He strongly suggested it resembled a Russian Condor turboprop plane. At this point, it was becoming a freak show. By about 3 in the afternoon, the entire sky was full of contrail clouds, and you could only see a few blue breaks in it all. The weather was clear, and no clouds were in the forecast. It was very windy, which actually dispersed the contrails throughout. Then around 5, I noticed a fog-type mist hanging around the mountaintops, which was obvious because you couldn't see the mountaintops. Now, I'm totally amazed, and I understand what all the people, including you, Art, have seen, and I saw on a perfectly clear day. Go figure. Also, being this far north, I never even see contrails, maybe one or two. But by golly, I'm a believer now. As I said at the beginning, the sky don't lie. Signed, anonymous from New Hampshire. There you are, William. Is that typical?
That's typical, and we have an epidemic, underlying epidemic, of upper respiratory illness filling the hospitals, emptying schools in New Hampshire as we speak tonight. We're well outside of the January to March flu season. Many other states reporting the same phenomena. Weather forecasts do lie, and they are often wrong. The person who sent the fax made a couple of excellent points, but this just jumps out at the reports I'm getting. Weather forecasts continually call for sunny skies, clear weather,
right,
while outside we get this San Francisco-type fog and haze and complete overcast again and again and again.
We're actually getting it here in the desert. Now, that's hard to do, William, because I live in an area where when summer comes, and it's now coming, we begin to descend into single-digit humidity levels. And we're seeing those kinds of hazy, weird days that I've never seen before out here. Period.
He mentioned that he was in church, and that's interesting in itself, because the second sample that I was involved with Armenia, came while a woman on the East Coast was in church herself in January of 98. And when she got home, the neighbor said, gee, we're watching an airplane flying so low, we thought it was going to hit our barn.
Mm-hmm.
It flew over her house and splattered that aluminum-sided structure with this brown goo. And like other people, this person reports that she lives near a very small, almost disused airport, taking small charter-type aircraft with quite a bit of recent military activity. And we are finding that all over the country, frankly. Small airports suddenly hosting quite a lot of military aircraft. Anyway, she called up the FAA, and they said, don't worry about it, that's cornmeal.
Cornmeal.
She thought, oh, I'm curious, because she couldn't even power wash it off of her house. It wouldn't come off.
Cornmeal.
Cornmeal.
Cornmeal. Now, why would they say cornmeal?
I don't know why they would say cornmeal. Maybe there were...
Is it logical to ask what an airplane would be doing dropping cornmeal on us?
At rooftop level?
Yeah.
Fair question. This stuff was a sticky gel. In no way did it resemble cornmeal. So I'll have a few more things to say about the FAA and what I believe is evidence of a cover-up.
All right, we've got plenty of time here, and I've got someone on the line you might know. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes.
Who is this?
This is William Wallace.
William Wallace.
Excellent.
William Wallace, where are you?
Where am I? Well, you know where Orient, Washington is?
I do not.
It's on the Canadian border next to Idaho.
All right. You are the person who originally contacted William Thomas, is that correct?
Yes.
Tell us your story briefly, please.
A couple of years ago, I was plowing a field, and looked like an interceptor, intruder, Navy intruder, flew over the tractor I was plowing,
mm-hmm.
the field that I was plowing, and it flew right over me, and something sprayed from the back of it. It made so much racket that, because these things are really loud, I turned the tractor off, I thought it was blowing up, and I jumped off the tractor as this thing went over me and sprayed me, and I ran back to my International Scout to get my binoculars. And as I watched it, there were two of them, and it came back and did it again. And by the time I got to my Scout, I started feeling sick, my eyes started watering, and within a few minutes, liquid just poured out of my nose, and I got a real bad headache. And the next day, I was in so much pain, I couldn't, with my right arm, I couldn't even put it up above my shoulder to comb my hair. And my joints started aching, and my hips started aching. And then, in the weeks to follow, I eventually lost my job because my work was so bad that, you know, I just couldn't do it. I got so weak and tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I never totally got over that. I would have bouts of it now and then. And that was the first time. And then a year later, my wife and I were up in our log house that we were building, and we started getting sick. And we started tasting this weird taste in our mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my wife, I said, you know, we've got to find out what's doing this because we're getting really sick. We start getting headaches. And I just happened to look up and I saw this contrail. And I said, Ann, look at this. This is unbelievable. I said, she says, well, it looks kind of like a cloud. And I said, I know. Well, we were hoeing weeds in the garden. And a little while later, I looked up again and it was huge. And then we saw some more jets flying around, you know, from east to west. So we got a video camera, and we started filming this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we sent, in fact, I sent you two tapes, one back in October, another one in January.
That's right. And then how did you get on to William Thomas?
Tom Grant from Channel 4 News,
because
I'd given him the tape, gave me his name. And then he got a copy.
In other words, a legitimate investigator to look into all this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because he said that he would be someone. Well, what happened was I made the comment. I said, where are all the environmentalists?
Yeah.
I mean, they're up here in the forest, you know, all over the place. But when it comes to them spraying us, nobody seems to, you know, be doing anything. And so he gave me William Thomas's phone number.
William, how are you now? How are you and your wife now?
We've been pretty sick. We've been having a lot of problems with our joints aching.
Yes.
And we got a silver colloidal machine.
Right.
And it stopped the diarrhea, Right away. And it was like a diarrhea. It would come and go and come and go for several months. But we had about 3 weeks ago, they sprayed us from here all the way to Spokane, really heavy, and everyone started getting sick. And they started getting diarrhea, and we're taking care of my wife's 96-year-old father. He used to be a doctor and a surgeon for 4 years and ever. And he got this diarrhea too, but he started bleeding. And we had to take him to the hospital, and he almost died.
Lord.
He was there a whole week, intensive care, and they gave him three pints of blood or whatever because he lost so much blood. He's home now. He's dying. And I know this triggered this. I think this is really hard on the elderly.
Mr.
A lot of people.
Mr. Wallace, you heard the Boeing engineer, senior flight test engineer, say, look, these are just contrails.
Well, I've been hearing a lot of that because I sent some of my things in a video and everything, and also a copy of your last show with William Thomas to the FAA in Spokane.
And?
And they viewed it, and they said the same thing. And then they sent forward it to the Pentagon.
Why would they have done that?
Why? They thought that they would be interested in it. So I talked to a lady in the Pentagon.
Yes.
And the same story, same thing. They believe what the so-called experts have to say. And as long as an expert says something, nobody questions it. And the problem is people need to question authority because authority is not doing their job. This lady, I told her I'd give anything to have your job. I don't have a job because of this, and I spent all my free time trying to get this information out to the people, and these people that are in power that know what's going on, they're not doing a thing. I mean, let's fire them.
Well, yeah,
their job.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah, absolutely.
What is so telling about William Wallace's experience and Anne are several instances that I think demolished this normal contrail for forever, in that Mr. Wallace has gone to the media on a couple of occasions, and you can tell that story better than myself.
Oh,
you
yeah.
were visited after going to the media. You were visited after
yes.
I mentioned your name on Art Bell, and after you wrote to Arthur Jones and talked to the FAA in Spokane, he wrote you back and said, we'll take this up with the United States Air Force Environmental Affairs people, and you may expect a direct reply. William, you got a direct reply, and could you tell us what that reply was?
Well, this has happened on three different occasions. I think that's one of the reasons we've been so sick. My wife has been really sick lately. We've been having the worst headaches in the world, you can't imagine. And they'll go on for like 2 days at a time. And I've never had headaches. I've always had perfect health my whole life. And so has my wife's been so sick, it's really been hard on her.
So what did they tell you?
Well, my wife had a blood test the fifth time, and she has Epstein-Barr and fibromyalgia, and her liver is all messed up. And she told me the other day, she said, well, she didn't think she was going to live much longer. I'm really upset, and I'm not... I'm really upset, and I'm not going to, you know, let this go. These people...
Mr. Wallace, a quick question for you. Who came to visit you?
Okay, what happened was we had a turboprop plane fly over, and they fly a lot lower than these other planes,
right.
These jets.
Right.
And it sprayed just at the edge of our property, and we were outside when it happened. My wife and I just happened to be out front. And it sprayed all the way across our property. We have 24 acres, and it shut it off. It started it. We saw right where it began and right where it stopped. And before we could get in the house, we could start getting sick. That's happened three different times.
Is that what you meant by a visit?
Yes.
I see.
And the first time I went to Channel 2 News, they had showed it to some people, and then they decided they couldn't do anything. And 3 days later, I had the first visit. And I've had three all together. Today, at about 5 o'clock, there was a another interceptor flew right smack over our house.
All right, hold on, both of you, and we'll be right back. I'm Art Bell. Chemtrails. That's what we're talking about. Now back to William Thomas and William Wallace. William Wallace, anything else you want to... did you ever have... anybody actually come to visit you, a suit-type person?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I have a half-mile-long driveway, and there's a few no-trespassing signs. And I don't really expect anybody to come up there. I've got a couple of big dogs. Not that they've hurt anyone, but I haven't had anyone come up there to actually, you know, knock on a door and drive a black Cadillac or anything like that.
Well, I wish you well from here out. Any other questions, William, for Mr. Wallace?
Yes, I'm quite concerned about Ann's blood test positive for Epstein-Barr. You know, this raises some red flags with me, William. Joe Burton, also a longtime investigator of the chemtrails, as you know, is very ill, and he has been tested positive for, among other things, Epstein-Barr. And when I started looking into this further, I found a direct connection, repeat, direct connection, with mycoplasma infections. We're talking Gulf War illness here. We're talking, as I've mentioned to you, William, many of the signs and symptoms that you and Ann are experiencing, and there is a direct link between the mycoplasma and Epstein-Barr. And I'm very, very concerned because, of course, my book, Bringing the War Home, is all about the transmissible factor of Gulf War illness, about the mycoplasmas that the U.S. military has been experimenting with for many years now. And I'm seeing some of these same signs, and I urge people to get their hands on this book, including yourself if you can, because there is a chapter on effective treatment for this condition. But this Epstein-Barr business is very indicative of something something sinister going on here, I think.
Mr. Wallace, we're going to have to go, but I want to thank you and wish you and your wife well.
And I thank you both for doing such a good job in getting this information out to the public.
Good night, Mr. Wallace, and again, thank you. Now, here's something that's kind of interesting for you, William. It's entitled Contrails. The cover story has already begun. It says, please ask William if he is aware of the contrail investigation being done by Rad Berkey, I believe it is, B-E-R-K-Y, at WPLG Television in Miami. The military is telling him the contrails are something called chaff. The following is a quote from the transcript of Berkey's TV report. Not a single environmental group we talked to in South Florida has ever heard of chaff, had no idea what it was or what the potential hazards are. And one military officer told me privately, we'd like to keep it that way. Well, I know what chaff is. Chaff is something you drop to confuse radar. Pilots know very well what chaff is indeed. It goes on. This is chaff, fine strands of metal coated fiber. It's packed in tubes like this and loaded on most military aircraft. When a pilot is targeted by enemy missiles, radar, these chaff canisters are fired, dispensing literally thousands and thousands of fibers that now show up on enemy radar. So what about that? Is that a possibility?
No, I've looked very hard at that. I'm aware of that show, and I have a copy of that transcript. I've been looking it over today before going on air. They asked an Air Force general to have a look at some of the radar images and some of the photographs, and he said no way that could be chaff because the cloud formations or the radar return is simply too big. It's miles long. These chaff dispensers in fighter planes are very limited in their capacity. They give you a burst, a puff of this chaff to deflect missiles that might be coming your way. They certainly are not able to form mile-long clouds in the sky that we can see visibly or on radar. They do not dissolve on hit striking the ground as the cobweb-type material people describe so often does. And as far as I know, the Air Force is not putting pathogenic material on this chaff.
Sure.
Who in the world is going to spray chaff around major international airports? You would quite a few accidents, I think, doing that.
Yeah, beats the hell out of me. You certainly wouldn't want to confuse conventional radars, which are still used at most major airports, as well as, of course, a transponder location. Now, so you're absolutely correct. It would be idiotic to drop chaff near a major metropolitan airport. That wouldn't make any sense at all. William, I've noticed that since we broke the story here on this program, all of a sudden there are others, kind of like yourself, professing to be reporting on contrails, other radio programs, even television programs, newspapers. I've seen reports in newspapers since we broke all this. So you are getting some media attention on this, aren't you?
I guess we are. No one's come to me, though, except for the Californian, a newspaper out in Bakersfield, a hot spot for these reports.
Apparently.
I felt they did a very balanced job, but otherwise no media person has contacted me.
There are others springing up on various radio programs doing the same sort of thing you're doing now. I've seen some of that going on. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Where are you, please?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, yes, I'm in Salt Lake City.
Yes, sir.
What I wanted to tell you about was, and you mentioned something about brown spots on houses.
Yes.
We've had three different incidences here where different times, not the same dates or anything, but in fact one happened today, and they mentioned it in the news. It was in the news all day today.
Oh, really?
And what they're describing it as, they thought it was blue ice, which is toilet fluid dumped from aircraft, and they tested it, and they said it was fecal matter, but it wasn't. They didn't know for sure if it was from an airliner or not. And then they immediately send the hazmat teams out and spray it all down with a real heavy bleach, and I'm not sure if anybody's even tested it. Like William was saying earlier, and found all this stuff growing in it.
Well, let me add this. I think, William, you can tell us. People talk about this and think that poop is dumped from airliners, but that's just not true, is it? In other words,
absolutely not true. Those are holding tanks. They do not vent to the outside. Your caller raised a flag with me. The hazardous people went out there and sprayed this stuff down immediately. Well, we have two incidents. Again, Armenia has uncovered two more goo incidents in Utah. The fire department's biohazards team came out and washed it down before they could collect any samples. Like your caller, this made the news. In fact, it went back to NBC affiliates across the country, but they sprayed the building down and said, oh, gee, we didn't get any samples.
And that's what happened there, caller?
Yes. I could probably, actually, if you called your host station here, JCOR 570K News, they were the ones I actually heard it on today. They could probably give you an address, and you could probably track down the place. And
So K News had a report on it today?
Yeah.
All right, I'll tell you what. If there is a board operator at K News, call my network right now at area code 541. 664, well, let me see, 8829. And I'm going to try to have my man at the network get your number, and we'll call K-News and get the report. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right. I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you very much. My. So this is making the news independent even of what you are reporting on, William. In other words, these individual instances, why would they feel it necessary to spray whatever came down with bleach?
They certainly reacted very quickly to what they considered to be a hazardous subject, given the teams out there in Salt Lake and the two other Utah sightings I just mentioned. Without taking samples, that seems very strange to me for a response to a suspected hazardous material. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, though, that this brown goo is extremely hazardous, and I urge listeners not to mess with it. Armenia, my associate, is very ill tonight. She just sent me an email earlier and said her voice was down to a whisper, which reminded me of Billy Joel quitting his tour, his music tour with Elton John, because he lost his voice and has come down with upper respiratory problems a couple of times.
So I've heard, yes. So I've heard. Let me correct one thing. Don't call the number I gave you. Call the technical number. If our affiliate in Salt Lake has our technical number, call that number and leave a number where I can call you, and I will do so during the break, and we'll get you on the air if you can give us a report. William, there does seem to be an awful lot of good technical evidence. Somebody writes and asks, why is William not willing to give us the name of the labs that have done the testing that he refers to?
For a very excellent reason. The only lab mentioned in connection with these tests is Aquatech Environmental. And a couple of years ago, they did a test on something and found ethylene dibromide in a jet fuel sample. And I emphasize, this was a sample of jet fuel taken from a commercial aircraft in California.
Gotcha.
And tested in Ohio. Aquatech was very friendly to the people who brought the sample in. I've been in close touch with both of them.
Yes.
They took a look and they said, oh, this is ethylene dibromide. They didn't even have to test it. They said, we're getting lots of this from sick pilots and ground crew. When the story got out that this lab was involved in the test, they got a barrage of calls, Art, and they got some wild calls from militia groups, and they were harassed to the point where they not only refused to speak to anybody about the test, the people who brought the test in, including a registered microbiologist himself, now allege that the lab changed the findings and introduced deliberately very, very low levels of ethylene dibromide. And I found some, I have a copy of that test report, by the way. I have a physical copy.
In order to explain it away.
That's right. And when Environment News Service went to them and said, what about William Thomas's story, they said, we don't know anything about any tests. I got some heat from that. I got my hands on the lab test report, and I will go to any length to protect the lab that has been very cooperative with us, and I certainly don't want to expose them to harassing phone calls or those guys in the black Cadillacs you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why. Now, when Ermini and I are ready to go in a national major media source for our full story, we will be able to use that lab's name. It'll be worthwhile, and probably some time will have passed. But for now, the lab is continuing to check our samples. They're cooperating with us. They're very concerned, however, Art, because they can't find much information on the material that they're finding. And they're telling us this is very strange, so they're uncomfortable to begin with, and I don't want to add to that by going public.
No, I can understand that. I surely can understand that. They have to, you know, they're a business, and I can understand the fear. Let's try one more here. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas and Art Bell. Where are you, please?
This is Topher in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh, Salt Lake. Yes, sir.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. I just had a couple things. One quick one is in addition to what the last caller said. My wife told me today that she heard on the news that that incident that happened today with the brown goo, it hit a vehicle, a truck, I guess, and there was a lady inside that said that she saw some kind of aircraft leaving the scene right, not very far from her at all. And
really?
Like a,
and okay, this was reported on your local radio or TV or what?
Yes, I believe that's where she heard. She either heard it or saw it on the news. And
okay.
It has been covered here before. I mean, I remember it coming up, and I watched the news at least every other night, and I thought that was very strange. But my other reason for calling was for something I consider a little more ominous, and that is about 6 weeks ago or so, maybe as much as 2 months ago, we had, on a weekday morning, some kind of a cloud or, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but some kind of smell-slash-cloud came hovering into the city, and there were actually people hospitalized, and this made all the news, dozens of times, papers, TV, everything, and I thought that was very strange, but then it got weirder that it seemed to leave and then return.
Mm.
And it just seemed to do that two or three times, if I recall. And there were hazmat type environment teams taped up at the Capitol doing air sampling and everything. Yeah, it was
really
interesting.
Really? I'm surprised. And that's incredibly suspicious.
It is. They did all kinds of testing with the local petroleum right near the area where it apparently originated is quite a petroleum area. And there were some people that said, oh, maybe it's just the smell, they put natural gas, and, you know, and I seem to remember many reports saying that they didn't think it was, they couldn't find any of that in it. But like I said, it came back and left two or three times.
All right, my friend, thank you very, very, very much for the call. And please correspond with William Thomas. William, in two separate instances, my wife and I noticed these odd contrails, and we also smelled a smell that I can't easily describe to you, because I've never really smelled it before. Kind of an oily smell is the only way I can describe it. Oily. And we both were feeling not well following that. Now, that's my own personal experience. Kind of an oily... hard to describe, William. Kind of oily. That's the best I can do. And we both felt kind of ill afterwards. So, you know, this is a big story you're onto, William. You may have a tiger by the tail, but I guess you know that, huh?
I'm well aware of it, and I'm going to wear plastic gloves when I grab this tiger's tail after finding black yeast, molds, and pathogenic bacteria in our samples.
All right. Hold it right there. We'll be right back. We've got William Thomas here. We're talking about contrails. Contrails or chemtrails?
I can see clearly now the rain is gone.
Once again with William Thomas. William, welcome back.
Thank you, Art.
This story is unstoppable, as far as I can see, with regard to the response I'm getting, what I hear on other radio programs since our original program, all the rest of it. It's simply unstoppable. I worry a little bit that we have some mass hysteria going on here, and I'm sure that we've got some of that going on. People who now will never look at a contrail, even a real one, the same way again. How much of a factor, William, do you think that is right now?
I share your concern. As I mentioned, I am seeing some photographs of normal contrails. I know people are very anxious now. I know for myself, the sky is no longer a friendly sky, and I'm constantly anxious to check it out. It's almost a reflex. For people who have been following the story, I will add that many reports of the chemtrails and odd-looking sky signs came before our first show, Art, and so I don't think that we have had a direct influence in so many different sightings. That aside, I am concerned that people... be aware and awake and look up and study the skies, but not to be afraid of every single aircraft or every contrail that goes over. I think that is a fraction of what we're hearing being reported. But again, the volume of mail and interviews that I'm doing now and reports that I'm receiving are from some pretty sober people who do not seem to tend toward panic, and they're simply observing some oddities in the sky, usually continuing for weeks over the same area, that I would not, repeat, not ascribe to any kind of hysteria.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move through some more calls here and see what we've got. First time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi. Hello.
Yes.
Going once.
I'm here.
And then turn your radio off. That's something to do right away. Good. Where are you?
I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee.
All right, sir. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, Art?
Yes.
Art, nice to hear you.
Glad to hear you, sir. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, I've been a long time listening to you for a long time. I'm listening to Knoxville. My name's Jeff from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Right.
And about a year and a half ago, I looked up in the sky, and I understand what you're talking about, the contrails. I saw X's all over the place. I live on a mountaintop, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, in this area of the country, I have seen this happening on a daily basis. And my dog, I've had to take it to the vet. It's a horrible thing, and I'm really teed off about the whole fact that this is being done to us, and it's not very good.
Actually, you do bring up a very good point, sir. William, while a lot of people spend a lot of time indoors, I'm one of them, pets, dogs, other domestic pets spend a lot of time outside. And if mammals are affected, you would imagine that pets would be affected, wouldn't you?
They are being affected very much so. Not only small pets, dogs and cats, I get many reports of them taking ill. William Wallace's animal, other investigators' animals, and just people that have reported to me have gotten very sick cats and dogs, even to the point of them dying. So they do seem to be particularly susceptible to the spray. Bigger animals as well, Art. We have some 17 horses and quite a bit of wildlife dying in Ashford, Arizona a few months ago. And they found a fine hairspray-like substance on the backs of many of these horses. One rancher lost three horses himself. And when I started looking into this, I found that a Pseudomonas variant causes a disease in horses known as glanders. And I wondered about this because Pseudomonas variants have been showing up in lab samples since the very first samples have been done on this substance.
I am getting multiple reports now, a lot of email. I'm sort of monitoring my email. And Salt Lake City, indeed, unfortunately, we're unable to get hold of our affiliate at this hour, but I've now had about 25 emails saying they've all heard the stories on this brown goo, whatever the hell it is, that has been falling from the sky. And apparently teams are rushing in with bleach. And that's weird, William.
That's very weird.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas and Art Bell. Hello.
Hello. I'm not going to give my name or anything.
All right. Well, you're going to have to talk an awful lot louder.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Better, yes.
Okay. Basically, I am convinced, and I'm not easily convinced. I'm a pretty new listener to this show. But I want to tell you some things that have been going on. I can tell you where I'm at. I'm in Jacksonville, Florida. And there are a lot of Navy bases and military activity that go around.
Oh, you bet.
And I and my coworkers had something very interesting happen to us last November. Basically, what has happened is we have different shifts where we work. And we pretty much carpool together and go down the same, arrive around the same time. And interesting enough, we all came down with this flu-like symptom. And it was just the people that basically went to work at the same time, the same shift.
Mm.
Now, you can dispel this as, everyone just passed it around. But it was everybody was in contact with other people in other shifts. And no one else got sick except for the people on this one shift. And we had communal, we were in an area where we had physical contact with other people, if there was like, a flu or a cold, something that's contagious, that the people would get it. Also, my husband did not get sick. Myself and the coworkers that arrived at the same time, we did notice quite a few times that day, they remember that day, it was November 2nd, that we were going down the road and there was a lot of semi-low flying aircraft. And we're used to a lot of aircraft around that area because of the military bases and everything like that. But this was a little odd, just the way that it was flying. It wasn't flying the normal patterns that we see from the airports and things like that. And I wasn't listening to your show back then. So this is something that is just brought up that I thought was very odd. And I used to be in the medical field also. The thing is, though, we all got sick. We've got really sick. I'm talking temperatures I personally had a temperature of 104 and I had to go to the emergency room, and this lasted for 3 days. We all had various upper respiratory. We went to different doctors that were assigned to us because we're on a group medical plan.
Right.
And we were all treated by different doctors, and they all said basically the same thing. It was a flu-like symptom, but they didn't really tell us what it was. They were like, well, okay, well, maybe it's upper respiratory or basically bronchitis or something. But we all had basically the exact same symptoms, the exact same problems at the same time. We were all fighting it, and we went to the doctor, and we all prescribed different medication, new antibiotics that I had never heard of. And because I was in the medical field for 8 years previous to this, I just got out of it and wanted to do something different. But the thing is, though, these are brand new antibiotics that they gave to each of us. One of my rides received a one dose type antibiotic. It was like a new antibiotic. I received a new antibiotic that was on a 7 day. And another coworker who I did not ride with but was on the same shift received yet another type of antibiotic. And that's fine. You know, they're trying to get new antibiotics because, you know, we have super bugs and everything nowadays.
I know. We're running out of them.
I'm sorry. But the thing is, though, we all had different antibiotics, and then they called us. When do doctors call you back? They really rarely do this. They called us back to see how we were doing.
And?
The thing is, I mean, we pretty much all got over it, but I mean, there was residual coughing and everything, but my husband never got sick. It wasn't a contagious type thing. It wasn't a flu.
I hear you.
This is something, you know, we all aren't, you know, in the same cars, and we were, exposed to other people. This is not something that we were exposed to at work. This is not something we were exposed to at home, because then our families would have gotten sick, and none of our families got sick.
All right, I think I've got the picture. Typical, William?
More and more so. I'd like to suggest to your caller and to your listeners to get a hold of my book, and maybe we can give that number in a minute, and I'll tell you why, Art.
Sure, we can give it now.
Well, okay.
What is the name of your book?
The book is Bringing the War Home, and it speaks directly to this. The toll-free number is 1-888-690-1277.
Okay.
That's 888-690-1277. It's $22.95, shipping included. And it talks quite a lot about a very tiny critter, kind of in between a bacteria and a virus, called a mycoplasma. And I am willing to guess that in this instance and in many others, we are talking a mycoplasma infection. And I just received today what I consider a breakthrough in this investigation. A professor, Coleman Salloway, who teaches epidemiology out at the University of New Hampshire, and I mentioned at the top of the program an epidemic of upper respiratory problems and severe illness at that university. And now he's attributing some or many of those illnesses to mycoplasma infection. And this is striking. He says the symptoms of mycoplasma are similar to that of the type A Sydney flu strain that some hospitals and doctors are attributing to these disease outbreaks without testing them in a lab, by the way. The lab tests are so expensive that very little corroboration is being done. And when they do manage to test, they're finding in most cases it's not the flu at all. But the symptoms are similar between
flu,
the type.
Yeah, they call it flu-like symptoms.
That's correct, for a very good reason.
Because it's not really quite the flu, but it sure seems like it.
And the mycoplasma leaves a cough that can last up to 4 weeks or longer. That's very telling. Influenza, as we all know, is usually a 5 to 7 day wonder. So we are seeing what appears to be an epidemic of mycoplasma infections throughout the United States and beyond. I talked to Dr. Garth Nicholson, who I feature in my book, Bringing the War Home, who together with his wife discovered the mycoplasma fermentans in the blood of Gulf War veterans who were very ill, many of whom had never left the United States. They found this mycoplasm. They tracked it down to an experimental anthrax vaccine. And as you're well aware, Art, there's almost a mutiny going on in the U.S. military today.
I am aware, yes.
With people saying, don't put this in my arm. And I think they're very wise to be concerned. But another researcher of mine, DJ, out on the California coast, tracked a U.S. patent, 524-2820. This awarded through the National Institute of Health, a misnamed organization if I ever heard one, for inventing a pathogenic mycoplasma. And get this, this links mycoplasma fermentans directly with pneumonia, chronic fatigue, respiratory distress, lupus, all the things that we're seeing in the wake of heavy spraying. I'll quickly add, I am not saying we are being sprayed with mycoplasma. Not at all. I am saying that this is a very, very rare, has been rare anyway, opportunistic infection that preys on people with weakened immune systems. And I think that the mycoplasmas, the strep outbreaks that we're seeing, and the death toll that is rising, the meningitis, these things have been very rare, and now we're seeing outbreaks throughout the United States. Again, I think of opportunistic illnesses that are striking people with severely compromised immune systems.
All right. From today's, I repeat today's, Salt Lake Tribune, the following. Investigators probing a fourth feces drop in southwest Salt Lake County believe a pilot of a small aircraft was spotted buzzing homes near Taylorville on Wednesday night. He might be responsible for the rash of potentially hazardous waste spatterings. And on it goes. So indeed, confirming that whatever it is they're dropping, fecal matter, one can barely imagine a plane dropping fecal matter on a city the size of Salt Lake. It is, in fact, occurring. I've got the story right here. God, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just got a couple of points to make and a couple of questions.
Where are you, sir?
I'm Phoenix, Arizona. My name is Steve.
Okay, Steve.
The aircraft in question, the refuelers, have a pressure relief valve. So if the pressure builds up in either the cargo fuel or in their own onboard fuel, they can blow off pressure. Also, which may account for as they're climbing to altitude, they may be building up pressure and blowing off the pressure and spattering this fuel out into the atmosphere.
Right.
Also, a lot of those tankers are never empty, so the chances of getting inside and scrubbing them down is next to none. So if there's an opportunist bacteria growing inside them that feeds on oil, which they used to actually harvest for the oil spills up in Alaska, I know they exist. They most likely be living inside the fuel tankers to start with. So if they're blowing off fuel, they're blowing off these bacteria as well.
What about that, William? Is that possible?
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. The Pseudomonas thrives on fuel and petroleum, and as the caller indicates, Steve, has been produced by the U.S. Army, among other agencies, in great quantities. The Pseudomonas fluorescens is very amenable to genetic manipulation, so is the Aeruginosa variant. And these Pseudomonas love fuel and could grow spontaneously.
Oh, this is very interesting. Both of you hold on. We're at a break point, and I'll bring you both back in a moment. From the high desert, you're listening to Coast AM. We're discussing contrails. Or as I said earlier, are we? Stay right where you are. That's big, all right. All right, back to William Thomas and our caller. Caller, you're back on the air. Sorry we had to cut you off there at the bottom of the hour.
No problem. There's another point I'd like to make. The very nature of refueling requires the aircraft to go out, take an assigned grid, and crisscross that grid back and forth, waiting for the squadron to show up to refuel. It's not like they fly ahead of the squadron waiting to intercept them or something.
Right.
And therefore, the patterns you're seeing in the sky are simply a pilot doing grid work, waiting for somebody to show up to fuel up.
All right. William, you want to respond to that?
Yes, negative on that, I'm afraid. We have a Major General Barlow in correspondence,
stating that Air Force tankers, the KC-135 you mentioned in particular, the aircraft that is in many of our photographs and sighting reports, he said emphatically they do not form contrails ever because they do not fly at 33,000 feet or higher where, he said, contrails usually form.
Yeah, that's tankers, a very good point.
Tankers fly at lower altitudes to refuel tactical aircraft. It's true they do fly patterns. In no cases, in the hundreds and hundreds of cases I've seen, in zero cases have we seen aircraft of any type forming on these tankers and actually undergoing refueling operations.
All right, very quickly, the caller's still on the line. William, what is a typical refueling altitude? I, too, sort of knew that they did it at a lower altitude. Where?
I would guess around 20,000 feet or lower, because obviously you don't want to waste fuel climbing up to them. But the altitudes vary. They can go quite low if there's an in-flight emergency. Again, I'll stick with the military's own designation saying they do not fly in contrail country, and I'll repeat that we have never seen a refueling operation in connection with these chemtrail sightings.
Caller?
Okay, that's a given, but what about blowing off fuel in order to stabilize the pressure in the tanks at lower altitudes?
That's possible, sir. I'll take your word for that. However, we are seeing sprays emitted from these aircraft over a period of hours, not a puff of spray that might characterize a overpressurized situation. This goes on for quite some time, and I'll add that I have found no jet fuel in our samples. I have seen no samples with of this fallout, the gel or the cobweb material with jet fuel in it.
All right. All right. All right. Thank you very much, caller. I thought you answered that quite well, William. Here is an airline pilot who wishes to remain unidentified. I take it you fly for a major airline, sir?
There's a major airline based in Houston, Texas.
All right.
And I just wanted to say that I kind of agree with what Rocky said earlier to an extent. I'm a first officer. I've been a senior first officer. I've been flying for about 15 years with Continental, and I can honestly say that I've never really seen anything that approached covering all the sky from just a thin contrail.
All right. Let me ask you this, since you've been flying for that long. Is there any way that you would suggest to us that over the years that you've been watching contrails and no doubt producing them,
and we're really close too. I mean, we pass 2,000 feet underneath another contrail. Sometimes we actually fly through them, and I mean, we get so close that as the wings make vortices, they're horizontal tornadoes, and it just takes that contrail and whips into a tornado, and it's very very interesting to look at.
Have you noticed any difference at all in the nature of contrails in the years that you've been flying?
The only thing I can say is that I read an article, I don't know how long ago, and this article was about this man that had observed these contrails, and they were from jets, and I forget what part of the country, I want to say the Southwest.
Okay.
And he said that he would watch these over a period of time, and as they would come out of the jet, they would thin out and get blown with the wind. And after a while, this one contrail, which would only be normally very narrow as it first comes out of the airplane, would widen out into quite a large area, although it was very translucent since they were ice crystals. So I do remember reading an article about that.
Mm-hmm.
As far as refueling, when you get these little small wings on these fighter jets, they don't like to get up real high because there's no air to hold on to. They like to refuel, and I would say probably in the mid-20s, I would say.
Okay, so then you're confirming that it's at a definite lower altitude.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, those airplanes, those fighters are not designed to fly real slow. I mean, they can do it, but they're a real high angle of attack, and they're sitting there bobbing around trying to get on this tanker. So
Gotcha. They
don't want to hinder the guy by going up where the air's even thinner.
I got you. All right. Well, thank you very, very much for your input. So that validates what you said about the altitude.
A question, if I may.
Sure. Oh, he's gone.
Oh, no.
Yeah, oh, yes. What were you going to ask?
If in his experience he's ever seen contrails form, or often form, at altitudes of around 9,000 or 10,000 feet, and if he's ever seen rainbows or prismatic colors associated with contrails.
You know, let me take a stab at that one. The rainbows could indicate two things. They could indicate the presence of chemicals, obviously. Or we've got to remember, what makes a rainbow? We see a rainbow when we've got sunlight and what? Rain, usually. In other words, a part of the sky is raining, a part of the sky has sunlight in it. And, of course, the prism effect causes the rainbow. You're essentially looking at light diffusing through raindrops. And I'm not a scientist, but isn't that correct?
Sounds right so far.
So if airplanes produce water vapor that we know as normal contrails, would it be unusual to notice multiple colors occasionally in them, the prism effect that we see with a rainbow?
In my personal observations over decades, the short answer is highly unusual. I understand the physics that you're relating, Art, but in actual day-to-day reality of looking at contrails, I don't think I've ever seen rainbow or prismatic colors associated with a normal contrail.
Yeah, frankly, I haven't either. Just thought I'd ask. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, where are you?
I'm in Texas.
Okay.
I'm a Gulf War vet, and while I was over in the Gulf, you could basically look up at night and see lights all over the sky. It looked like the stars were just swirling around because we had so many aircraft in the sky. And the night that the Scuds went up toward Israel and Iraq, or Saudi Arabia, I'm sorry, I was on radio watch that night, and I was the man that got to go out and alert everyone.
Mm.
50 feet from my command vehicle, I smelled something in the air and was frightened enough that I donned my chemical mask. I've been sick since I got out of the Army, and I'm going through the process of the Gulf War vet physical. And I told this to the doctor I'm seeing, and she just sort of raised her brow and said, oh, that's very curious, you know, like she hadn't heard that before. But, yes, I do feel that, you know, something is being experimented here, and a lot of people are getting sick, and I think it very possibly does have something to do with chemical warfare.
Mm-hmm.
I'm suffering symptoms such as this joint pain. Many of the veterans are suffering this joint pain.
That's very well documented now.
Depression, confusion. The odd thing, though, that I see is that this is the first year that I've noticed I haven't gotten a cold. I didn't get sick. I'm a smoker. I didn't get bronchitis this
mm-hmm.
year. And actually, I'm in pretty good health other than the other symptoms. And I contribute that probably to the fact that I did get an anthrax shot while I was in the military. So digest that one.
Well, at least you don't have anthrax.
Well, not that I can tell.
Right,
I don't
sir.
Know what to believe anymore.
All right, thank you. I feel the same way. I don't know what to believe anymore. William, I'm leaning toward saying that you really are onto something, but I, like most Americans, I don't want to believe it. I don't want to believe it.
Thing I've heard on all the talk radio lately, it amazes me that we don't need an excuse to jump up and do certain things, but
yeah.
When we do have a good excuse, we can't seem to get up to the courthouses and the state capitals and say, hey, what the hell's going on?
Well, that's because we don't know what the hell's going on, not fully, not conclusively. We seem to have some evidence. We seem to have a ton of people who are willing to say, yes, I've seen it. No, it's not normal. Yes, I've been sick. But we've got to move this story from point A to point B, and point B is more lab work, some insider information, somebody who's willing to blow the whistle somewhere on what the hell is going on. How do we proceed, William? You tell me.
I would like to see blood tests done
very thorough blood test and see if we can start tracking what I believe is a mycoplasma epidemic underlying many of the illnesses people are being diagnosed with. And I'm convinced that we are going to find mycoplasma underneath many of these symptoms and illnesses. And if we do, as your caller is well aware, we have a direct link with U.S. military experiments dating back to the late 60s after Vietnam. We have a direct link to Gulf War illness and to these research labs. That's one avenue. And in fact, I may have an inside source with some information for us tonight.
Really?
Well, I've been in contact with a person who has identified himself as a high-ranking U.S. Air Force officer.
Who has spent quite a bit of time recently up in the stratosphere on various projects. I won't give his name out over the air.
All right.
In attempting to verify this, of course, we can get anything in a letter or an email. I've been questioning him over a period of weeks, and I can tell you that the type of aircraft he has identified match exactly with the aircraft that we have identified in connection with the sprain. And the other things that he said do ring very true. And he says that my shows with you, my emails, my website information, he said, has interjected me into a phase of military aviation I was not aware of. And this gentleman has been going around since then at very high levels making inquiries about what's going on. And as a result, he tells me, his security classification has been bumped upwards, limiting even more what he can reveal. But he, I'll just give you his last letter to me, said, my observations and queries over the past few weeks where we have been measuring parameters relating to stratospheric folding along the East Coast have developed a picture of extensive operational and intrigues and cover programs that fit many of the factors of your claims. To give you a clue, the white aircraft are camouflaged, but not in the usual sense. This person, this high-ranking officer, says he has had detailed briefings at McGuire and Patrick Air Force bases. He tells me that Eagle is a key word, and when I said, what in the world is stratospheric folding, he explains that this occurs when the parts of the stratosphere bend down into the weather-making troposphere, and the Air Force is very interested in running experiments at this interface and is apparently doing so.
Listen, I want to give you another shot to plug your book here. It's called Bringing the War Home, and it deals with what we're talking about, this whatever it is. And the number to order this book is 1-888-690-1277. That's 1-888-690-1277. You deserve to be read, and you deserve also, I want to do the same thing that I've done before, William. This is becoming so interesting that I would think that other media would want to get some information from you and do a story. And if they want to do that, how would media get hold of you?
They can email me. That's the quickest way to reach me these days.
All right.
Wilco, W-I-L-C-O, at islandnet, one word, .com, islandnet.com. Your listeners can go to my website for information at www.islandnet.com.
And we've got a link up, of course, on our
great, /Wilco. And I will say that I have an information kit now available for faxing or emailing to media sources who contact me.
All right. So, media, if you've got the cojones for it, why don't you investigate this a little bit? Just email William Thomas at Wilco, W-I-L-C-O, at islandnet.com. That's easy. request information, and then do what you're supposed to do, investigate. First-time caller, East of the Rockies, call toll-free 1-800-825-5033. David, we don't take last...
Okay, I'm sorry. Did you blink that?
Yes, I did.
Wonderful.
So we're going to have to start all over again. You're David only, and you're calling from where?
I am calling from just north of Nashville.
Okay.
Mr. Thomas, I have had direct contact with a spider-type material on a part of my body, and I was wondering, how long has this been present?
Oh, boy. Some of the reports go back... to the 50s.
To the 50s. It's been about 23 months for me. I like to, if I could, I have got more physical evidence than you can imagine. Even a videotape of this spider type material that I have I've found a method of extracting it, if you would.
Well, you've got physical evidence in...
Yes, sir, I do.
Have you tested it? Had it lab tested, sir?
A senior environmental health and safety coordinator for a major petroleum company I don't want to speak of has done an X-ray spectrometry lab evaluation on this. Yes, sir. And at this time, they sort of like done the legal eagle, if you would.
What do you mean?
They told me exactly what they wanted me to hear, and then they just got in a position to where nothing could be done.
I don't follow you. You had an analysis done,
yes,
and they gave you a report, right?
No, sir.
No.
No, sir.
They didn't give you a report.
They promised me a report, and they sent me a very nice letter, if you would. It was eloquently written.
Which said basically what?
Therefore, I've got it in front of me. It says, therefore, in conclusion, it is our opinion that the case of the dermatitis is not likely to be connected to our product and probably from another exposure source. But it goes on to say that we cannot guarantee that the grease does not cause your condition or your experience in its original form as virgin product. It is considered to be non-toxic, but we have enclosed for your review a material data safety sheet. Goes on and on and on.
Yeah, okay. I think I get the picture. Here in my part of Nevada, we're constructing a four-lane highway between Aaron Brub and Las Vegas, and they've got trucks with gravel, you know, the big rocks, because they're doing a lot of road work out there. And there's almost no way you can travel that road without having a rock come off one of these trucks and hit your windshield. And if you somehow stop the truck, which is impossible because they're going the other way a lot of times, and get the driver's name and write a letter and claim your claim, they're still going to come back to you most times with some sort of letter that explains it away and denies any responsibility whatsoever. Sounds just like what he read. William?
What was the substance in the material data sheet?
He didn't get the report. They wouldn't give him the report.
Oh, I thought they sent him a safety data sheet on some substance.
They didn't give any specifics. They simply, according to what I heard him just read, disclaimed the possibility it could have been their product.
Oh, boy. I myself have been in touch with a senior FAA official, Federal Aviation Administration, and I am now convinced that there is a cover story, let's say, that I'm starting to run into. Other people are starting to run into this cover story.
Which is?
Well, I had a gentleman contact me after some spraying in Toronto, and he said he thought it was the planes were coming from Pearson International in Toronto. He said he called up the airport authority and asked what's going on, and he said he got a military-sounding voice on the other end of the phone, so he pretended he was an airplane enthusiast and said, hey, where's the air show?
It's going to have to be a cliffhanger because we're at the break point here. Hold on, William. William Thomas, my guest, this is Coast to Coast AM. Thomas, William, welcome back.
Thank you, Art.
Anything you want to get out here at the beginning of the hour before we go back to calls?
just to make a note that I am convinced that weather modification is at the top of the list of this aerial activity. I, however, do not have an explanation for the pathogens and the yeast and the molds that we are finding, sometimes to our personal cost in these samples, and we're now looking for a link, a possible link, between pathogens, polymers, and weather modification. I'm also concerned at an apparent cover story being put out by the FAA in our last exciting episode a few minutes ago.
Yes.
We left off with a military-type person in the tower at Pearson International Airport responding to a call about KC-10 and KC-135 tankers painting contrails low over the west end of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy shouted, "Contrails?" I have no information on that. My correspondent said this guy was actually frightened. And the gentleman there gave the caller a number for noise control. Hold on to that thought for just a second, because when I contacted the FAA Western Regional Office in Los Angeles and talked to the operations manager for the Western Region, we're talking California, where many of these sightings have taken place, and at least four adjacent states, this person told me emphatically that there are no unidentified aircraft flying over the United States. He said our radar operators from coast to coast watch all aerial traffic. There is absolutely nothing unusual going on. I thanked him very much for those comments. The person who had set up the interview called him next, and at that point I got a little suspicious, because this official denied he had ever spoken with me, denied the comments and quotes attributed to him. I should send him a tape of our conversation to help his memory.
Mm-hmm.
And told my friend to call the noise ombudsman for the Federal Aviation Administration. I think William Wallace as well was told to call the noise people at FAA.
The noise people.
The noise people. And in no cases have I heard of anyone complaining about noise in connection with the contrails. In fact, people are saying we don't even hear the aircraft sometimes making these trails. So there seems to be a cover story being put out by the FAA and perhaps U.S. Air Force as well to have people call the noise agency in regards to the chemtrails.
Oh, all right. Well, here we go. First time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi.
Hey, hello. I'm on my cell phone, so I hope you can hear me.
I hear you just fine. Where are you?
I'm calling from the Silicon Forest, otherwise known as Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And my name is Susan. And, William, I thought I'd mention that, you know, a lot of my friends, people out here, I mean, people in general that I bump into have had recurring flu-like symptoms at like every 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That matches, yes.
A lot. And then I called my friends in Colorado, and they've had the same thing, and they have other friends that have the same thing, and they bring it up before I do. They'll bring it up in the conversation like, oh, by the way, this is weird, you know? And I said, well, I've had the same thing.
It's extremely weird and extremely troubling. Again, we're well outside of the flu season. The Center for Disease Control just this week said that we are in an epidemic situation. We're talking deaths here. We're talking fatalities from pneumonia and severe upper respiratory complications. We are talking meningitis outbreaks. We mentioned earlier the strep, the staph that is striking so many people across the country. My friend Armenia wrote me, she said, somebody has opened Pandora's box here,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
something is loose in the land.
Yes, I have an aunt out in England, and she's also mentioned the same thing.
Well, we appreciate the call, ma'am. Thank you very much. You're one of so many. One of so many. And I don't know how to add all this up. I constantly wonder how much to attribute to OG Me Too. It's a natural thing for people to kind of pile on. They feel bad, they have a bad day, they have a headache, they see a contrail, and they put it all together. And how much is mounting evidence of a real story? That's what I'm trying to discern in my own mind, William.
Well, the details, Art, that people give from across the country do correspond. People who
who don't know each other, and I suspect do not hear detailed symptomology, are all telling the same story of the sky trails that they're observing, of the illnesses that they're feeling the effects of, and they match in detail. That's what is so compelling about this story. And of course, the fact that hospitals and university health centers are filled to overflowing with patients as we speak and have been over capacity since December, I think gives us an idea of something going on that is beyond the Me Too or the hysteria. We have actual illness here. We have hundreds and hundreds of photographs, miles of videotape, and the people who want to pile on or imitate and get involved, I don't think can match in detail what we are hearing so often.
Yeah. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with William Thomas and Art Bell. Top of the morning to you.
Hi. Pardon me. Art, this is Mike in Chicago.
Mike, you're going to have to yell at us. Get real close to that phone.
Okay, we got it. How's that?
Better.
Okay, listening on WLS and also WTMJ in Milwaukee and also Cincinnati and also sometimes Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
Depends on who has you when. A medical query, but first a little information. The previous caller had mentioned about the Air Force being very interested in the point where the stratosphere bends down into the troposphere.
Yes.
And just listening to a report on radio from the recent tornadoes in the Midwest, one of the meteorologists stated that one of the storm chasers explained that these bad F5 tornadoes were caused by the warm troposphere bending down into the cold stratosphere, or vice versa, but the warm layer bending down into the cool layer.
Right.
So the Air Force being interested in that seems to be quite timely.
Synchronistic, one might say.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Medically, my wife and I both came down with a recurring flu after January 27th, a chemtrail flight over Chicago. And she has, while I recovered, basically, after a couple of months, she has continued to get worse and was even hospitalized with congestive heart failure. She's 50 years old and otherwise in fine health. But her upper respiratory illness was the worst part. And finally, I ran across the Strange Haze site and read up on doxycycline treatments for Gulf War.
Yes.
And against all of her doctor's wishes, we finally got one doctor to prescribe the doxycycline.
And
now she's clearing up her, she's coughing up all the phlegm and stuff and starting to get a little bit better. So we're going to fight against the doctors who just throw up their hands. They all want to apply their own hammer, though. The
mm-hmm.
cardiologist wants to do an angiograph. The pulmonary specialist wants to stick a laparoscope in and take a look at her lungs from the inside.
Naturally.
So we're not letting any of that happen, but she's also had the strangest, we both had the strangest peripheral edema. Instead of just her ankles swelling up, the calves would swell up in the upper calf. And then the ankles would go away, would clear up, and the upper calf would stay swollen and painful, which is sort of the exact opposite of the direction that it should clear up from.
Gotcha. William, again, typical, huh?
Yes, very typical. And your caller has described the one of the only known cures and treatments for mycoplasma infection and Gulf War illness, though usually it takes multiple courses of doxycycline. That raised my attention level quite high. Also, I'll reiterate that in the samples that we've tested, clean, uncontaminated samples done by a government-licensed lab, we are finding molds and bacteria that can lead to pneumonia, meningitis, all kinds of severe complications. And if anyone out there is spitting up a green phlegm, that is a bacterial indicator. It is serious. You should get it checked out immediately and treated before you develop any of these conditions.
William, if you were to conjecture, let us for a moment imagine all of this is true, and they are spraying something that is making people sick with flu-like symptoms or the other illnesses that we've heard today, why would the American government spray its own people? I mean, that's a very basic question. Why would they do that?
I'll give three quick answers. One is, we've noted the U.S. government has been spraying biologicals on Americans since 1949 to test dispersal patterns and biological warfare in general. No difference there, except this has been going on so long, I personally can't believe that it's simply a test. Two, we have the U.S. Air Force involved with a defense aerial sciences team working on aerosol obscuration research to develop aerial cloud screens to hide aerial Pentagon activity. We have weather as a force multiplier, the Air Force manual on weather modification, talking about deploying cirrus shields, cirrus cloud shields formed by the chemical contrails laid by high-flying aircraft. Among other desired objectives of the program are storm enhancement, and we certainly have seen enhanced storms very recently, perhaps as a byproduct of these intense weather modification experiments. People are being exposed to pathogens and taking ill as what the military would call collateral damage or unintended damage. However, because the program is ongoing, because so many people are ill, because these pathogens are known factors in so many different illnesses, we can say now that for whatever reason, the program is a deliberate, continuing, perhaps even intensifying. And finally, I will speculate, since you asked, I'll bring up Y2K. The clock, as you mentioned earlier, Art, is ticking.
Sure it is.
Military commanders, as I note in my revised April edition of my Y2K book, are extremely concerned. And frankly, no one knows what will happen. But if you are in the military in a command situation, you do know this, that on January 1st next year, if you press a button on your communications, navigation, or weapon systems, you do not know if those systems will work.
That's right.
As intended. Perhaps these flights are being intensified and the spraying is being intensified to beat the clock, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
What if the U.S. government was so concerned about a possible uprising, we're talking an armed uprising of some very nervous people in the United States. We know there are plans afoot for martial law. We know there are urban warrior exercises with the military in major cities across America right now.
That's great.
Have been going on. What if the government decided that one way to literally cool this whole thing out was to make people sick enough and confused enough that they would not be able to resist anyone coming to disarm them? They would not be able to take their protest, if you like, or their alarm, for that matter, to the streets. A wild speculation, perhaps, except in my investigations, Art, I have run into FEMA on a couple of occasions in connection with, let's say, shadowy figures that keep turning up around some of the more major incidents, Oakville, Washington, for one, and other incidents. And
the only problem with all this is that they should be preparing for that. I mean, awful as that may sound, it is, after all, our government's job to preserve order in a situation that might get out of control. I mean, that is their job. And if Y2K potentially, nobody knows what's really going to happen, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
But if something did happen, they would be derelict of duty if they didn't have a plan in place to keep order, wouldn't they?
Well, I agree with you totally, and they do have a plan in place, and it's called martial law. My counterpoint, Art, would be if you are conducting something in the air that is making many, many people very anxious indeed, you are ramping up the anxiety level and increasing the chances for public unrest by not coming clean. If this is somehow a legitimate program of some kind, we would certainly like to hear about it and have it verified and settle our anxieties before Y2K.
All right. Here's a question for you. This last flu season, which appears to be still going on, they had a number of phone numbers that you could call if you had the flu. And if they were interested in your flu, you'd get free treatment. You know, numbers like 1-888, I'm sick as hell, whatever they had. And you'd call the number and they would ask you a series of questions if you met their criterion, whatever that was. you would receive some sort of free treatment. I thought that was pretty weird. I've never seen that occur before. Have you?
No, I haven't, but the requirements were quite specific. You had to be within 32 or 35 miles of exposure area. You had to have specific symptoms within a specific time frame.
Precisely.
That's bizarre. That smacks of a biowarfare tracking program, if anything does.
It really does smack of that. All right, hold it right there. The other question that I want to ask that I'll bring up after the break is about pathogens and polymers. There's a big difference between a pathogen and a polymer. A polymer, you might speculate, is something that would be in the air or put in the air to interact with, for example, HARP or something else for weather modification. But a pathogen is something that, in my way of thinking, makes you sick or potentially makes you sick, right? I think that's right. We'll be right back and ask if it's right. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. My guest, obviously, is William Thomas. We're talking about the infamous contrails, or chemtrails, if you will. And I do want to follow up right now, if I can. William, you mentioned pathogens, which to me are things that potentially make you sick, and polymers, which polymers are some sort of plastics, right?
Correct.
Plastic fiber, whatever. Now, are you suggesting that these two are related or that they are separate things for separate purposes?
I am stating emphatically that they are very much related, and they're related in the U.S. military establishment. We have found in our sample tests out on the East Coast that the brown goo taken there had been on this aluminum-sided house for 1 year, one full year, in snow, rain, sun, wind, had not come off. And Armenia suggested, felt very strongly that this goo, before having it tested, now we know that there are pathogens in it, but she thought it also contained polymers to keep it impervious to the elements. We find that Pseudomonas fluorescens, the bacteria responsible for upper respiratory problems and a host of ailments, can be put together with polymers to make it resistant to environmental degradation. We look across at a recently breaking story on Gulf War illness into an experimental adjuvant introduced into an anthrax vaccination, an experimental vaccination that made so many veterans sick, and the tracer that Tulane University used to track this down was a polymer. A polymer, if introduced into the bloodstream, excites an extreme autoimmune response, which, at least theoretically, would make your vaccine much more effective, much quicker. The problem is that our autoimmune system would go into continuous red alert, would not turn off, and would actually turn against the body. So if we introduced a polymer with a pathogen, we could excite an extreme autoimmune response and actually possibly trigger autoimmune diseases. I have a sample of material that was taken from the leading edge of a wing of a small plane that went up to photograph the X's. I can tell you that I haven't touched it. I have examined it, and without getting a lab test, it does appear to fit the polymer designation. It's very thin, hair-like strands.
Are you going to get it tested?
I will get it tested, Art, for pathogens as well. And it's one thing we did not test for in our two samples. We did not look for polymers, and we're going to go back and have a look.
All right, here's a headline. Red dirt falls from sky in Columbia, Missouri. Art, during your 1:30 a.m. Pacific time break, your Columbia, Missouri affiliate, News Talk 1400, KFRU, announced that they're going to have a special segment on their show this morning, May 7th, about the red dirt that fell from the sky this week. And so something happened in Missouri. Red dirt falling from the sky, and they're going to do a whole program on it. So there's one for you. Here's another. This involves a NASA study. Remember the gentleman we had earlier who said that he was not aware of any studies ongoing about the effects of contrails? Project Success, subsonic aircraft, contrail and cloud effects special study by NASA. What is success and why is it taking place? Success is a NASA field program using scientifically instrumented aircraft and ground-based measurements to investigate the effects of subsonic aircraft on contrails, cirrus clouds, and atmospheric chemistry. The experiment is co-sponsored by NASA's Subsonic Assessment Program and the Radiation Sciences Program, which are part of the overall aeronautics and mission to planet Earth programs, respectively. So there you are, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, we are looking into how contrails are affecting our atmosphere and our weather. NASA's doing it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Is this, am I on?
Sounds like you are.
Sorry, I didn't have any warning. Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
To start it off, a little insight on the Salt Lake City cover story about the blue ice. Now, I know blue ice forms with a leaky valve on an aircraft. When it's in the air, it freezes, and this is only in 30,000 feet or more, and then that'll break the panel open and fall out. Now, there's no way that blue ice can fall underneath 10,000. It just melts. But that's not why I'm calling. I just left my job with a major airline as a ground fueler. I've been fueling for about 5 years. I've never had a problem. All my coworkers, no one's ever reported a problem until 9 months ago. We all started getting very ill.
Really?
Very ill.
I think you need to communicate privately with Mr. Thomas. William, what do you think?
Absolutely, and I'll mention again that when the tests of jet fuel were taken into Aquatech, they said, here's another one. And they had many, many complaints from ground crew and refuelers. And I've received reports that Air Force refuelers from the Gulf War, as a group, have taken extremely ill.
Hmm.
So you're not alone in your problems.
Well, we've all gone to... I stopped going to the doctor over 6 months ago. They just said, it's just the flu. It'll go away. It'll go away.
Group have taken extremely ill. So you're not alone in your problems.
Well, we've all gone to... I stopped going to the doctor over 6 months ago. They just said, it's just the flu, it'll go away. It'll go away. It hasn't gone away. I just quit, moved to northern Minnesota, just got away from it. And it hasn't gone away. I've never seen a contrail. I know contrails very well, but I've never seen what you're describing, the contrails. Seen them on Art's website. I know what you're talking about, but I didn't get ill from those contrails. I've gotten ill from handling our jet fuel, our commercial jet fuel.
Yeah, I think you need to communicate with William Thomas. And William, please give out your email address once more.
It's Wilco, W-I-L-C-O, at IslandsNet, one word, IslandsNet.com.
Okay.
Wilco at IslandsNet.com.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Kathy. I'm calling from Palmdale, California.
Yes, Kathy.
And we consider ourselves the Comtrail Capital here.
Comtrail Capital?
Oh, yes. It's been going on for 3 months now. But on particular, April 27th was a very monumentous day. There was three aircraft all at once. Crisscrossing, going back and forth, back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
The skies at the beginning of the day were blue.
Mm-hmm.
No forecast of clouds, anything. Like you in the high desert here, we do not have fog. We do not have low clouds like you find in some valleys.
The only time we get any sort of mist or obscured sky here is when there are large raging forest fires somewhere here in the west. That occurs every now and then. Otherwise,
Right, right, because we have high winds all the time.
Right.
And anyways, on the 27th, I watched, the skies were blue in the morning, and as the day progressed, I watched three planes going back and forth along the whole Antelope Valley here. And as the day progressed, we got our little crisscrosses, our X's, and they fell spider-webbed, and then we became getting very overcast.
Mm.
And the strangest thing, and I got a picture of it, was the sun. There was a huge brown ring around the sun.
Oh, boy, I've heard that from a bunch of people.
It was the wildest thing I had ever seen.
No, you're about the second, I would say 24, 25 reports of what you've just said. From the same area, so I believe exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and it was just wild. And then again today they started, but they started late, about 7 p.m. And I got some pictures of some nice X's that were just falling, just like oozing out of the sky. And I thought, this was so bizarre. I'm just so fascinated with this. And from being out in the outdoors a lot, I've been getting a lot of sore throats, this, that, and whatnot. But I feel the cure of taking my over-the-counter allergy pills and smoking has helped it from progressing.
I hear you. All right. All right. Thank you very much. I've got an email here I should read. Art, I am Will's co-researcher. Armenia, is it?
Armenia.
Okay.
Glad to hear from her.
Who you're speaking of. I would love to call in and speak with you regarding the research Will and I have been doing on the goo falling out of the chemtrails that is making people, including myself, terribly ill. I have strep throat, and I can't speak clearly. Just a whisper at the moment, Art. Please tell your listeners to listen carefully to what Will is telling them. This is not hysteria. It's real. If people come in contact with this brown trap, to please tell them not to linger anywhere near it. It's full of bacteria, molds, and yeast, and can make you mildly to quite ill, depending on how strong your immune system is. In the near future, if you can have Will back, I'd be happy to come on with him and describe more of our findings to you and the audience. I hope you see this during the show. Can't call in. Don't have a voice at the moment. Thanks, Art. Thanks for telling everyone this bizarre story. There you are, Will.
And she added in a similar note to me, Art, take a shower. Armenia was exposed twice to hairspray-like substance that fell in her hair when she was out for a walk. Other people have reported the same, at least other women have reported the same phenomena. Women, I might add, who do not use hairspray. And again, take a shower if you feel you're exposed to this. Use an antibacterial soap and get this stuff out of your hair and off your body.
That makes sense to me. All right, to our first-time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas and Art Bell. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, can you hear me good?
Well, I hear you reasonably well.
Well, I'm on a cordless phone, so I wanted to speak up.
Okay.
I'm calling because, well, I've experienced some chemtrail activity, but I was calling more for the adjuvant, what he was talking about, the polymer.
Yes.
That attaches to the... I read Vanity Fair, you know, but they have a huge investigation about this. And I was very concerned that, you know, if they're starting to link the Gulf War syndrome to the adjuvant that was attached to the anthrax vaccine that they gave, that supposedly, we're not supposed to know this, but supposedly they gave this to the Gulf War, you know, people that were there. And, you know, why, if they would do it to them without their knowledge, why wouldn't they spray it or spray a germ with the same thing on to us. You know, so, and I understand the polymer part. That's why I wanted to call. Maybe I'm not making any sense, but I can't believe that earlier you were talking about the same thing that I was concerned about. I mean, I understand the chemtrail thing, but I'm more concerned about if they did it to the veterans in the Gulf War,
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't they spray it on us as citizens? The same adjuvant attached to some even innocuous germ that wouldn't really hurt us unless it was attached to this thing that made our immune system kick in.
I surely have no answer for you. Maybe William does. William?
That was a superb article in Vanity Fair, by the way. And the polymers found in the experimental anthrax vaccine in the adjuvant did indeed make hundreds of thousands of people very, very ill. It's possible an adjuvant could, or a polymer type adjuvant could be added to spray mix. We find Pseudomonas fluorescens and polymers often listed together. We find some 161, at least that many patents held by the Pentagon for Pseudomonas fluorescens, and we'll find polymers intermingled in some of those patents. Also, we've talked on earlier shows about the use of polymers, sprayed polymers, to modify the weather, perhaps to interact with radio frequency beams from HARP, similar transmitters. That's a possibility. However, the polymers are introduced into the human body through inhalation after being exposed, whether it's weather modification or some more sinister, deliberate attempt to sicken people, the results would be the same. The results would be a heightened autoimmune response and, in people with weakened immune systems, a host of autoimmune-type diseases, which we are, in fact, seeing sometimes at epidemic levels across the United States and, I will add, in Europe and the former Soviet Union as well.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
We will be looking for polymers in our sample tests.
You know, to me it sounds like you're getting closer and closer and closer all the time. Every time we do a show, you're a little closer to having it nailed.
I feel that. I feel it, Art.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Got a question to William about pulsing sounds. I was here in Other Beach, Hawaii. We're between Iroquois Point and Barbara's Point, both naval bases. Just a weird thing, 3-4 years ago, not this late at night, but a little earlier, but the point was I heard this like pulsing sound, like a boom, boom, boom sound. As it higher it got, the more high-pitched the sound got. It sounds nothing like an airplane, jet, or propeller line. Nothing like a helicopter, but it was pretty weird to hear that kind of a sound at night. I couldn't see anything, so I couldn't see if it was an object or plane or whatever, but that, and also wanted to send my condolences from Hawaii to the family in Texas from the Mark Tenese football player.
First-time callers, area code 775-727-1222.
In Hawaii are concerned and praying for them.
I really appreciate that, sir. Thank you. William, we are woefully out of time. And so I'm going to give you an opportunity again, if you would please, to give your website. We have a link. You can go to my website. Just go down to the name William Thomas, click on it, or go directly to his website, which is
www.islandnet.com/Wilco, W-I-L-C-O.
If you're in the media, if you have some very direct information regarding analysis that you've done or material that you're holding, you can email William Thomas at William
Wilco, W-I-L-C-O, at islandnet.com. I take a deep breath when I give that out, Art.
I understand. And one more time, your book is?
Bringing the War Home, available at 1-888-690-1277, $22.95, shipping included.
The number one more time for those who are reaching for a pen.
888-690-1277. It's a good read, by the way.
Is that a 24-hour number?
It is.
Well, listen, my friend, you've done it again. We've done the whole show. I thank you so very much for the information that you're giving out, and I hope that some of the American press will wake up and at least begin to look seriously into what you brought forth.
Thank you, Art, and I'll say this, that if they do not wake up soon, we are going to have a very powerful lobby knocking on a lot of doors.
I hear you. Good night, Will.
Good night, Art.
See you later. That's it, folks. Now, as I mentioned to you earlier in the week, on Tuesday when I returned, there are going to be some guest hosts filling in, but you're going to be getting live talk radio. So tomorrow night and Monday night, Hilly Rose will kindly once again fill in for me on the program. That's tomorrow night and Monday. For now, that's it for me. I've got some pretty serious business to tend to. From the high desert, where we shouldn't be having these kind of contrails, I'm Art Bell. Good night.